busy man. He's got things to do.
It's all here Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. Folk Everything with Hugh on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston.
Discover the Tet Center for Creativity and Learning, a vibrant arts hub at 370 King Street West in Kingston, right beside the Isabel Bader Center. Enjoy a coffee at Juniper Cafe and explore three floors of galleries, studios, and arts organizations. Borrow instruments from Joe's Mill, sign up for art classes with groups like the Kingston's Potters Guild, and dance with Kingston's School of Dance. Join Tet Tuesday Open Studios the second Tuesday of every month to connect with fellow creatives. Students, you can host events at the Tet with reduced rental rates. Learn more at tetcenter.org and follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Tet Center. Your artistic journey begins here.
And it is now almost a minute after 5 o'clock. Thanks for tuning in to CFRC 101.9 FM. Our second hour located here in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. This is Finding a Voice, a spoken word program airing here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And for those of you who might have just tuned in case you didn't catch the first hour, you're going to realize that a lot of the names in these open mics are the same, but there are some variations. So I do like to go through them so you kind of know in advance either what you just heard or what you're going to hear. So in that first hour, in the first round of the December 2nd and the Journey Continues open mic at the Elm Cafe in that monthly series, you heard readings by, again, Peter Martinier, Brendan Wiley, Keith Poole, Chantal Lavoie, Michael Flaho, Bruce Cudmore, Sarah Emtage, Joseph Elliott, Sue Publicover, Allison Wong, Clark Renault, Cashy Antonio, Sonali Samaya, Olivia Parent, Leo Roberts, Jordan Lane, Andrew Andrichuk, Fiona McMillan, Liz Huntley Yench, Harlequin Crow, Connor Park, Dozy Ubosi, and me. And now coming up in this second hour from that second round in that December 2nd and the Journey Continues open mic, you'll hear readings at the Elm by Keith Poole, Eric Folsom, Michael Flaho, Bruce Cudmore, Sarah Emtage, Joseph Elliott, Sue Publicover, Allison Wong, Clark Renault, Cashy Antonio, Sonali Samaya, Olivia Parent, Andrew Andrichuk, Fiona McMillan, Liz Huntley Yench, Nicholas Lennox, Harlequin Crow, Connor Park, Dozy Ubosi, and me. My first mention at the start of each hour is that occasionally some poetry, spoken word, or music played on this show may contain strong language. I do try to preserve that as much as I possibly can to maintain and honor, really, the creative integrity of both the author and the piece. And you know what? I've already read through all the names, and I will read through them again after the reading. Let's go ahead and just jump into that second round. I will tell you the first reader in it you're going to hear is Keith Poole. And I'm doing it this way just because we're not real tight, but a little bit tight for time in this hour. So, but I will repeat again. I will introduce them as you hear them come up to the mic, but I will, after they read, also introduce them again. But again, the first poet you'll hear is Keith Poole. Here you go. And up first in this second round, let's bring up Keith Poole.
Okay, so I've been meditating for several years, and one of the things that always strikes when you sit and you close your eyes, you know you have a body, but you don't actually feel the full three dimensions of your body, like the entirety of your arm and your hands, and you certainly don't feel the outline of it. Except when the wind is blowing. And so I wrote this poem called Meditation, sitting on my balcony one summer afternoon when the breeze was blowing. The breeze describes a cheekbone, the curve of a thigh, that disappears in the stillness that follows. Ephemeral man. Thank you.
So give Michael another fulsome.
So this poem got too long, and I've broken it into two parts. It will end with to be continued, and you'll just have to come back in January for the other half. Okay? Come on back. The book smuggler. He grew thinner as the cancer ate his stomach. Broad, Lithuanian face masked by thick glasses, grim with the rising tide of peritonitis. Stoic would have been a modest understatement. He who'd organized after-work polka parties now avoided a glass of Pilsner with supper. He vanished in front of my adolescent eyes long before I had heard the saga of his youth. His daughter, my second mom, who idolized him, spun the family legend many years later. Grandpa Serpik was born in Lithuania, a Baltic country still ruled then by Russia's czars. His birth certificate, done in Cyrillic script, says, born in Volbaniki, 1892, which is probably Russian for Vabalninkas. And the date comes from the Julian calendar. We have an old photo of the family home, thatched peasant house, elaborate wooden cross prominent in a fenced front yard full of flowers, subsistence farmers like most Lithuanians, well acquainted with woodlands and mushroom hunting, Catholic believers, not Russian Orthodox. They had separate folk tales, poetry, music, suppressed and discouraged by the Russian rulers. Past rebellions had birthed an ongoing crackdown. School children could only be taught in Russian. Lithuanian language books were forbidden. Newspapers and magazines likewise illegal. As years went by, an underground network evolved to carry books over the East Prussian border, German printing for Lithuanian readers. By nightways, Grandpa Serbik was a book smuggler. Eldest brother, Antanas, worked as a teacher, a secret Lithuanian school in the barn. Local kids were learning to read their own language while my grandpa Kastan supplied the class with books. Someone talked. The Cossacks conducted a raid, swooping in on horseback while the school was in session, scattering students through the fields and the forests. They seized Antanas and stood him against the wall. To be continued.
As we give Eric another hand, let's bring up Michael again.
Maybe I'll stand with my back to you. So this is just another one of the stories. Many thanks to Webster's Online Rhyming Dictionary. And it's based, inspired by the expression I read about two ships meeting in the night. It's called The Meeting. The night was a cool breath as our ship cut through on phosphorescent waves the world in the dark hue, when all of a sudden something loomed, a dark shadow with indistinct line, and within that darkness a warm light, gold warmth in it shine. I felt the helm shift as if deep in the sea something was rising that it could not quite believe. We both slowed to a stop, strangers on by, and then drifted together side alongside. The lantern or eyelid flickered once more, a question reflected on the water's dark floor. Was it iron I saw, or a breathing mass, a ship, or a creature behind that indistinct glass? The shape refused definition, edges darkened away, a hull in one heartbeat, then a flank as it swayed. Masts became ribs of some great thing unseen, the lines sinking back into blackness abeam. It seemed to study us softly as whales sometimes do, perhaps measuring intent and meaning and crew. We hung there, two travelers that chance somehow found, our glows caressed by a sea wind, our silence profound. The swell between us slipped and swirled like breath pushing life into an unknown new world. Each heave of the water pressed us tight. Each fall of it dared us to give way in the night. But neither of us sent word or sign. No flare, no words, no coded line. There was only the waves with their slapping dark tongue tasting the space where our shadows now hung. I felt its presence lean close into mine, curious, hesitant, perhaps even divine. So gently we rocked in what glow could denote, two wanderers together in a place so remote, in an ocean so wide it erases the known. We had found each other, yet stayed alone. Whether I'd met a vessel or whale that night, the dark's keeping its secret beyond my sight.
So give Michael another hand. Let's bring up Bruce again.
Hello again. So this is a haiku that became an extended haiku, and it might get extended more, but here it is. It's called Rooted. The red maple breathes in the gently warming air and forgets nothing. Her roots in the earth nourish every brief season of lucid colors. Her inner growth rings and branches outward to carve form in the cosmos. Her gains and losses, measured out in leaves and keys, shake wide as the wind. Her cold, wintry limbs articulate. Barrenness is but birth's dark husk.
Let's give Bruce another hand. Let's bring up Sarah.
I have one I wrote on paper this time. It's like, So I was thinking about how Advent is realizing it is also a time of embracing grief. Something I've been learning more about it and more. It's not really about a time leading up to Christmas. It's not really about a time of hiding the darkness or what we feel about it, but sort of facing it. And then, there's hope in that as well, but there doesn't have to. The hope that can fully face the harder things, and so this was, and that's something that's been like something I'm still learning how to do. But in the process, writing this poem was a process of learning to like accept grief in my own life. I love phoenixes, and I've written other things about phoenixes before, and I love like the resurrection aspect. But I had to kind of like slow down and turn back and like accept sort of the grief part of that comes with that. So anyway, this is what. As I wrote it at the time. Anyway. Does it hurt when the phoenix burns? Feeling its feathers aflame, it learns the agony of a glory that turns into ash and is stored up in urns. The life that it knew is run through. It will never be quite the same again. The loss is a sharp one and true, though these ashes will rise up to rain. The phoenix tears are diamond tears and treasures among the stars. Its cry is heard throughout the spheres and held in the heart of God.
Thank you.
To give Sarah another hand, let's bring up Joseph.
Hello. I'm chronically late and out of touch, so I think I'm going to read a couple of summer poems. Seems appropriate. And I'm going to read them once this time. It seems more natural, I guess. Summer drought, the new shape of the lake. Gentle wave, mallards hop from rock to rock. Fading light, minnows tap the air.
So give Joseph another hand. Let's bring up Sue.
I keep trying to find new ways to get the order of this poem right. So forgive me. Or enjoy. I spend a lot of time poking around in the woods and in the swamps and looking for creatures. So this was just an unexpected engagement with nature. Pushed to the edge. Peering into the rushes. Construction having pushed the reeds and cattails onto themselves. One foot on the fresh pavement, the other crushed gravel by a busy new road. Unexpectedly, a heron lifts from the water inches from me. Our hearts pound. I is surprised by her as she of me. Gone is the traffic noise behind me. The silence of spirit descends. And thankfully, we both have wings to rise.
Let's give Sue another hand. Let's bring up Allison.
Mentioned that it was 3 years since they started coming here, and that got me thinking that this month will have been too many years. Hold on. Five since I started coming? And I thought about reading a poem that I had written way back when, decided I don't quite vibe with it, even though I've revised it since then. So I'm going to read one that is thematically similar to what I was writing then, because I did take a bit of a thematic detour, but recently I've been dipping my toes back just to see how it feels. What does it mean to be a fish that drowns? I am most myself descending from 2,000 feet above ground, ears popped and sun blind. No landing gear necessary, just straight into a dive, a head long shot. No good. My heart still races, my lungs between my rib lanes, chasing bubbles that sink out of my skin suit. An endless, silent, breathless scream song. I must hold myself so tightly in order to sink as fast as possible. Impossible, says the fascia, so stubbornly clinging to my bones. How dare you compare yourself to a whale fall? But maybe then, I say, back, this is the only way I can be digested. This body which does not belong, does not fit otherwise in the mouths of all the people who stray close enough for a taste. This way, maybe the world will find a space for me and all my misshapen fingers and crooked feet. Perhaps I fit best as a fishbone between the teeth of all those bigger fish in this even bigger sea. Can't you see the scars all this swimming left behind? Persistence pays off, but for whom the bubbles blow. I have known drowning for as long as I could swim, a fish in water, a bird looking backwards at the sky, searching for a hook upon which I may catch. The way, 10 years old, the first time I remade myself in the image of a sea god. A fun game of dress-up, my makeshift trident and I, casting about the waves to see what shapes I could make in the breakers. In the years that followed, I tried to be mortal again, set my trident aside, forgotten, washed the salt water from my tongue, contented in small, delighted sips from occasional beach vacations. But I think, bumping up against the cold shoulders of my classmates, fighting the eddies between me and my peers, they could tell. They could smell the residual salt, diluted as it was. I opened my mouth, and the wind moaned, and sea spray and ocean winds I could not keep from crashing up against their castle walls. I reached out my hands and was tumbled away like swept sand, gritty and coarse, fit to play around in on occasion, but not to keep around for long. At 16, I rediscovered that old trident, flaking and rusting and too small for my hands, but I dug my nails in the surf, packing fistfuls of wet sand, clenched tight enough in my fist to once again become rock, and I have now, at last, remade myself a sea god, this shining, beautiful, life-saving trident, pen, paper, poetry. I have at last mastered the art of creating poems like sharks ever swimming in concentric circles around my heart, strong enough to guard the secret truth I keep buried there like treasure. I am lonely.
Give Allison another hand. Let's bring up Clark.
This one's called The Wanderer. I dream of you, I dream of the next. From time to time, who was the best? I can't choose one, more or less. All over the place, my soul needs rest. Me and her, but all can exist. When you leave me, you will be missed. Remember your touch, remember your kiss, hearts collide, feelings of bliss. Hold me tonight, but how am I alone? A wanderer of the world, I dream and I roam. A castaway dog, throw me the bone, I'm chasing you away from my home. To think with your heart or to use your mind, the romantic in me can't last a lifetime. Or can it? Can it stand to press against the lips of fear? Passion is what keeps us alive. To fight for what we love, for what we love is here. Think and act with our hearts, will it lead you astray? Show me what you will die for. In turn, it will show you the way. What are your values? Do they align with your acts? Travel the lonely road. Follow the different paths. For if belief is all you have, let it carry you far. Without hope is like an empty sky filled with forgotten stars. Picture us together in a world filled with harmony. Act with your heart, forget your mind, and you will start to see. Thank you.
And as we give Clark another hand, let's bring up Cashy.
Alrighty. So, from Spoken Word Club, there was another prompt to write about. It was write about yourself from the perspective of something non-living. So this is what I came up with. Okay. Beautiful people. Every track... Oh, sorry. Before I keep going, and you guys are going to guess what I'm writing about. Okay, starting again. Okay. Beautiful people. Every track that I cross, speeding by the glimpses of faces that I catch. It's brief and momentary, but on the window pane, all I see are many beautiful people. One face stands out. She's smiling. She's looking at me. Big dimples grin. Her hair, it swings. As I pass by, what beautiful people. Hands in pockets. Joy is radiant. A warm and wonderful sight for me. Passing by many beautiful people each day. I have never seen one just like her. In all my years of passing beautiful people, but yet they are all unique, all beautifully made.
Let's see.
So, I was writing from the perspective of something non-living. Is anyone?
A train.
Let's go. Sarah.
And as we give Cashy another hand, let's bring up Sonali.
This one's sadder than my last one. Sorry. And it has a title, actually, for once. It's called Nothing Is New. It is all the same, truly. You know, it's just the pit in my stomach, but everyone has one of those days, right? It's not a large, all-encompassing pit that I've fallen into. And my day is not done, nor has it been filled with any particular sort of dread, yet this small pit is the deepest, darkest thing in my body. I can't quite locate the pain, nor can I source it or address it. It is, however, totally normal and fine. Trust me, you won't notice it at all. For this needle-sized pit only makes itself apparent through its ability to tint my normalcy. It does not interrupt it or debilitate me, but it adds a lens of dull gray and paints my sun blue. It never calls me out of work, but refuses to leave me as I am. This exquisitely small pit, so insignificant I cannot describe its pain, is not going to be my reason for addressing a perfectly mundane question with an existential answer. But it is the reason I hope it's the first day that strangers and colleagues avoid small talk. The pit grows the longer I ignore it. Its location still unknown. But its pain becomes like a cold hug. Comforting for its presence, painful for its contents. With every passing question of my current state, the pit smiles at me, seeing me in my lies of reassurance. It wonders why I don't make it known anymore, why I decided that it's my independent burden to bury. And I say it's because it's my responsibility, my duty, to be the sole caretaker of my mind. It asks me back, are you sure? It is not because you're tired of being the ugly duckling, the odd one out, the one whose presence dims the lights of conversations. The pit enjoys being entertained. It enjoys being indulged and questioned, for it usually has a stronger argument for its existence than I have for its elimination. So I choose to sit with it in its form of a tiny black hole living in my body, sucking up the serotonin and leaving me with nothing. Its goal is to eat me entirely, swallow my pride for me, and rob me of everything that is keeping me from being the tusk of a woman. So I let it live within me. I let it stay with me. It has been my roommate so long that the cold hug feels warmer each time, or perhaps it's just the embrace that I'm cherishing. You needle-sized pit that has made a castle of a home within my psyche, I have given up on getting rid of you, old friend. Thank you.
As we give Sonali another hand, let's bring up Olivia.
I'm also following the trend of sadness right now. Okay. This one's called The Paradox of Just Being a Body. Buried deep within, there's a feeling of being more than just a displayed thing. Bodies, bodies, bodies. The bus is packed. It runs on the hour. And I've ran to mush myself against the cold exteriors of jackets and hover over the remains of warm hands that have gripped steel handlebars. You'd think in a bus you'd become comfortable with the common intimacy of brushing against another, being jostled by each stop, swaying, locking knees, apologizing for bumping another with a backpack or a work bag or a purse. But I seem to focus on those who walk on the street, trying not to slip on ice. I look to them, really, to avoid eye contact with the person that sits directly in front of me in a dank seat. I wonder how other people feel being seen. Even though this bus has those old, stained, upholstered seats, and I feel the dampness of collective breathing, everything within feels like silicone. I thought I was seen the last time I laid facing another. But when words mean nothing and decisions are made in absence, how can I know that I'm real? Bodies, bodies, bodies. I want to take the time to look at the people on this bus, each in their faces, but the bus halts at its next stop, and I have to concentrate about not slipping on the ice as I get off. The paradox of being just a body. Thank you.
To give Olivia another hand, let's bring up Andrew.
Hello, everyone. If I stand right here, you're all in front of me. This poem is called Wishing Clock. Wishing clock, up on the wall, you are so amazing. You're the fairest of them all. When I look at you, I just want to hold you in your embrace, because you grant wishes and you provide nutrients for me and all my friends and family. Thank you.
Let's do this then. Is that better for everybody? Good idea. As we give Andrew another hand, let's bring up Fiona.
Hello. Okay, I am going to read another old one. Going back, I have an Instagram where I post my poetry, and I'm scrolling back, and I found one that I forgot I wrote. I don't know if you guys feel this way, but sometimes I'll go back and read something that's so old, I actually can't believe it came out of my mouth and, like, my brain, because at the time it felt so present. But reading this now, I'm honestly so shocked that I wrote this, but in quite a sweet way. Okay, give me 2 seconds. I've lost it at the table. Okay, here we go. So I had a poetry professor once that said it's a really bad idea to ever say what your poem is about. You should just read it. And I really don't like that. I love saying what my poetry is about. And ever since I was a kid, I've been really interested in unconscious affection, more specifically the intimacy of sleeping beside someone. And I got super obsessed with the idea that when you fall asleep beside another body, you go into the same unconscious together and you, like, share in your dream world. And I think that's so cool. And I remember when I got into my first relationship, I was so obsessed with the fact that we were going to be in the same dream world. And now, living with my housemates, I like to think we're all in the same whatever. But this I wrote about that theory and that thing that I'm interested in. And it's called When Was the Last Time You Changed Your Sheets? Okay. You were the only one I ever wanted to belong to. I say that with a shameful smile because I realize I have now become my greatest oxymoron. I led my life in strength then, and as I lowered my skull each night, I would solemnly vow to never become someone else's. I spent my years reminding myself of how full I was and found immense strength in my singularity, for I had never looked any other way. I had never had another being tied to my figure, so I didn't realize how nice it felt to have an extra set of limbs cross-stitched on top of mine through the winter months. You insulated my life then, serving as an extra layer of protection from every scary thing I pretended to overcome with ease. I stopped pretending for a long time then. You were lovely when it was cold and joyous when it wasn't. You were every good thing I needed and the things that I didn't. And we spent hours on our glazed over haze, and sometimes when it was late and February had just passed, you would pull my collection of bones closer into yours. Eyes closed, unconsciously, you still wanted more. I couldn't believe that. I couldn't believe that someone could love me, even in their sleep. I used to imagine begging for that affection in broad daylight, yet you willingly gave me all of you, eyes completely shut. Thank you.
Let's give Fiona another hand. Let's bring up Liz.
So I read a lot of poems about being a mother, and I think probably you don't want to hear any more of those poems. So I brought in something else, and then I realized my kids are actually still in it. So I'm sorry. This one, I wrote it at a workshop with Lorna Kurgia, and she gave us a prompt to write a poem about your father's belly button. So this is called My Father's Belly Button. When I was a kid, my father's favorite record was Heather Bishop's Belly Button. He'd put it on and we'd dance around the living room. Oh, my belly button, he always sang off key. My father's belly button is the last living piece of my grandmother's flesh. She was a tough old bird, gave birth to three boys and a girl, but she only loved the boys. Now my father's favorite record is still Belly Button. He puts it on and dances around the living room with my boys. My boys lift their shirts and are delighted at the whirls on their own bellies. My father's belly, the place where he was tethered to my grandmother, is soft and jiggles gently when he dances. It is a pillow for bedtime stories. My father has loved all his children well. My aunt, who was not loved, could not have children and did not leave any belly buttons behind.
To give Liz another hand, let's bring up Nicholas Lennox.
Nice. I really like this tree situation. Boy, oh boy.
Is it going to be cool if I sing? You can say no. Okay, sweet. Here's what you need to know. I'm really good at being vulnerable in the right circumstances. If there's like super hot stage lights and drums and loud guitar, I'm a friggin' pro at this. I'm less good at it when I'm by myself. I've played a lot of shows in my life. I'm a musician at best, hardly a poet. And recently I got asked to do a gig that I'm really quite nervous for at a funeral home. And we've spoken a lot about grief tonight, and so I was like, okay, maybe I will try and sing this to practice for the funeral home so I don't screw it up. I've played at lots of weddings. So this feels a little different. They asked me to sing a song that I wrote, and it's a song about grief. It's about a place in the town where I grew up, Guelph, Ontario, if anybody knows it. There's a garden of trees there run by the university where all the trees have names. And the names are for people who've passed on, which is, I guess, why the funeral people called me. and it's come to mean a lot of different things to me over the years that I've known it. I wrote it in 2021 because I was really awestruck about all the trees there. I've since been married in that arboretum. My grandmother, who really, really wanted to make it to the wedding and died like 3 weeks beforehand, has a tree planted for her there. And the group that I usually sing this tune with is no longer a band anymore. This has been the big breakup of my life. I'm still happily married. Great. Not in a band anymore.
Boo.
So yeah, I'm really, really good at being vulnerable when there's big stage lights and I have to practice it when I'm by myself. So if this is chill, I'm just going to sing you my song with no guitar, no saxophone, no nothing. Is that okay? Great. Cool. Okay.
Oh, God. Wow.
This tune is called The Arboretum.
Very creative.
When I meet my end, bury me in the arboretum, so I can grow into something stronger than I was, so I can stand tall among my brothers, no different than all the others, and I can grow as old as I should have with you, love. Young lovers holding hand in hand, autumn leaves rustle underneath them, and I'll watch over like a four-leaf clover does. Let them carve all their initials among my branches and my bristles, and I'll hold on to that old song with you, love. Ooh, ooh, ooh,
Ooh, ooh, ooh, ooh. I used to be like them, back when I was young and foolish. Think those stones could have been a home for the two of us. But for all of my turmoil, I bet those arms are warmer than soil. I won't hold you to that old view of us, love. Maybe I'll build a house someday for your grandchildren to live in. Maybe I won't have any say in it at all. Maybe they'll tear me down to build condos, and I'll finally see Toronto, and I'll be warmer to be closer to you, love. Oh, when I meet my aunt, bury me in the arboretum.
Let's bring up Harlequin Crow. So, hard act to follow. Figure modeling. The scritch, scritch, scritch of pencils caress the curves and shadows my body expresses as muscles protest unfamiliar postures. Minor suffering for the sake of art, rewarded in sketches which reflect a beauty I never dared dream I might possess. Thank you.
As we give Harlequin another hand, let's bring up Connor again.
So I don't think this will fall on deaf ears for the people that are in this room here, and probably not the people that would be listening on your show as well. Because I'm talking about the feeling when you finish a book that you're really enjoying, and during that period of time, as you were reading it, you started to develop this like relationship, this like friendship with it. And when you finish the book, it's like your life is over and the relationship is ended. And I wrote this about that, and it helped me realize that it is the end of that relationship, but it's the start of a friendship with now a friend you really know well, and you know fully, and you have them for the rest of your life. So, I wish it was in the form of a woman that I could hold tenderly, feel, breathe in, and caress, all evening into the night, till the sun came up, and then all day, never letting go, enveloped, to protect her from everything, shield her, and all the while she whispers sweet stories into my ears. Of everything she is, I don't speak, just listen with a faint smile. Drooping sunset, orange, pale, bright crescent of citrus. Hunger for her words feeds me continually. Invisible rope of words woven and weaved, tightly, densely, intricately sophisticated in its brash simplicity. Its origins wrapped, tied around her soul or heart, its loose ends somewhere in the dark and cavernous emptiness that's my cranium when I'm with her. Darting, snaking, folding each curve of my plasticity, my intellect, my knowns melt and reshape around her words like knots of an oak, aged roots over older stones, cut and carved by her conscience, timeless centuries ago when her words began and never ended. Thank you.
Give Connor another hand. Let's bring up Dozy again.
Thank you. So this one is for anyone who has been nocturnal and anyone who struggles to wake up in the morning. It's called Vulgar Nocturne. The sun is setting with your blinds open, the end of your burning desperation. Another glass of water and conversations with yourself. Your motivation is peaking as the day dies. And soon the summer will be over. Another winter of harnessing potential. So what will we make of today? All our dreams are in the land of tomorrow. And tomorrow never knows.
As we give Dozy another hand, it was my fault. I overlooked Eric in the first round, so he gets two shots. So let's bring up Eric again.
What I wanted to do with my other poem was actually pay a small tribute to the Ontario poet Barry Dempster, who died on November 27th after something beyond 20 years of Parkinson's. He was a great editor, worked with Brick Books for many years, teacher, and a very good poet. Look up his work if you're not familiar with it. This is Burning Alphabet. From 2005, and 2005, it was a Governor General's nominee. I'm going to read a poem called Dear by Barry Dempster. Amidst the cushy sole prints of Nikes and the pussy willow pads of pampered terriers and labs, a sudden set of deer tracks. A seashell stamp of hooves. So close to the backyard patios, the chorus lines of marigolds look bruised. The lawn's tousled, a window or two smeared in the thick of night when we're dreaming of corridors and dolly clocks. The soft brown bodies of bucks and does are basking in our moonlight, nibbling on the last of our lettuce leaves, scratching impressions in our sand. They are the children we wish we'd had. Fleeting images of ourselves before inner lives grew blotchy, eyes heavy with 10 p.m. cop shows and those blessedly nonsensical dreams. They are shadows of joy and appetite, marauders of starlight, property of instinct and whim. Occasional Fridays or Saturdays, we tiptoe outside at midnight, wishing we could sneak a smoke or feel up someone behind the bushes, longing to be wanton, even irresponsible, tear some turf, rip a zinnia, devour a handful of fireflies. Although touching a deer would do. Stroking that muscled satin, drinking from its black coffee eyes, leaving a bare footprint next to a pair of hooves. Here we are, stroking the invisible, stamping our feet through the flower beds, fools doing the twist or frug, the sand between our toes slowly turning to mud in the dew. Face it, we no longer belong out here. Moonlight hurts like mercury searing nerves and tissue. We only have a minute calling in the cats before we start mistaking every shadow for something we shouldn't desire. Slam those doors, snap those chains. Curtains keep us safely 60 watt. How much later is it before our yards are filled with deer, raccoons, foxes, unicorns? We'll never know. We've already disappeared. Tomorrow, sunstruck, eager to weed or hold a hose, we'll notice those tracks again, those spilled grains of sand. Deer, we'll whisper, an endearment, being gentle with our lost, imagined selves. Barry Dempster.
As we give Eric another hand, let's also give Anthea, who's taking care of us, another hand. And I'm going to read a short poem to take us out of here. Just one quick announcement in case you were a little bit, I think I said it very early at the start of the first round, but in January we'll be here on the 13th, so we'll be here on the second Tuesday of the month because the Elm is closed the first week or so for cleaning and deep cleaning and repairs if there need to be any. So anyway, we've heard some incredible poetry tonight. Let's give yourselves and everybody else an applause. And this is very short. It's called An Awakening. There is an almost whimper, almost last gasp for air. You hear coming from the room you are in. You full now, awake, aware, and startled to realize you are the only one here. Thank you. And you just heard again from that December 2nd monthly open mic event at the Elm. And in the second round, readings by Keith Poole, Eric Folsom, Michael Flaho, Bruce Cudmore, Sarah Emtage, Joseph Elliott, Sue Publicover, Allison Wong, Clark Renault, Cashy Antonio, Sonali Samaya, Olivia Parent, Andrew Andrichuk, Fiona McMillan, Liz Huntley Jens, Nicholas Lennox, Harlequin Crow, Connor Park, Dozy Ubosi, again, Eric Folsom, and then me. You are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. And we do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. It's about 52 and a half minutes after 5 o'clock. I don't know where the time has just seemed to fly by this afternoon. Anyway, a few minutes left of the show. I do have some recorded announcements to play at the very end, but I do have a bit of time to share some events. But so I don't squish myself too much here at the end and run out of time, I'm going to go ahead and do sort of a normal close before I read the events. And first thing I would like to do, though, is thank all of you out there very much for having tuned into the show. I would also like to thank all of those who participated in the event that evening, not only those reading, but those who came, and there were quite a few who came simply to listen. And to our barista, Anthea, who took great care of us that night, and, of course, to the Elm Cafe for always being there, caring and supporting and a supporting host. And also just a quick reminder before we move on is that something else I also mention at the end of each hour or segment of the show is to remind you that every week I upload both hours of my show of this show to my personal blog space for it shortly after I get home at Finding a Voice on CFRCFM.wordpress.com. They do remain there for 3 years. I would like to
Also mention again, in case I didn't do it already, is you are listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce, here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And it is crowding now at this point, almost 55 minutes after 5 o'clock. Also, I would just a quick reminder. Let's see, I think I already did this. Yes, I did, about the blog space. But one thing I would like to mention that I always mention, there's a great show. In fact, two great shows after this one. So I hope you can stay tuned at the top of the hour to the first of those, 2 hours of East Coast music in a show called Saltwater Music that's hosted by Rob Carnell. There's also an hour show after that called Salt Licked in Rapture, which is really cool, incorporates some poetry in it as well. So maybe you can check both of those out. I hope all of you have a great week, and I've got just a few seconds here. I will mention, because two events coming up before the next show. Lit Live in Hamilton is always a first Sunday night of the month event. So that's coming up Sunday, June 4th, 7 p.m. The Staircase Cafe and Theater, 27 Dundurn Street. You can also check out their Facebook page is the best place to do that. And then, as Harlequin also mentioned, there's a book launch. His book launch is called Queer Holla. It'll be, I'm sure, a launch and a performance at Novel Idea Bookstore next Thursday, January 8th at 7 p.m. And I think I'm actually going to be about right on time here. So, again, please stay tuned for much more coming up after this show. But I hope you have a great week, and then catch you here next week. Take care, and Happy New Year.
Friday evenings at 6 p.m. here on CFRC, listen to Saltwater Music, a show covering all musical genres from the East Coast of Canada. Celtic, of course, but also rock, jazz, blues, folk, and a lot more. I'm your host, Rob Carnell. Tune in to Saltwater Music Friday evening from 6 to 8 here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Or you can catch us on the web at www.cfrc.ca. And for our listeners out east, that's 7 p.m. Atlantic and 7:30 Newfoundland.
Hello and welcome to Salt Licked in Rapture. I'm your host, Nishan Tung. Salt Licked in Rapture is a sonic exploration of, to quote Virginia Woolf, violent waves of emotion. Featuring both known and lesser known musicians and poets, a special emphasis is placed on oddball, enigmatic, outsider artists whose work invokes dreamscapes and feelings of alienation, nostalgia, melancholy, existential unease, and yearning. Join me on Fridays at 8 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Visit The Screening Room, Kingston's only independent movie theater located downtown at 120 Princess Street. They specialize in playing art house, international classic, and cult cinema, along with Hollywood's best new releases. People also always say they have the best popcorn in town. Visit Screening Room at screeningroom.com for upcoming show dates and ticket information.
Partners in Mission Food Bank could not exist without the loyalty, dedication, and support of volunteers, some of whom have been with us for over 30 years. Our team of volunteers consists of individuals who continually devote both their time and skills on a regular basis in an effort to make a positive impact on hunger and the food needs of the community. Volunteering has no age limits. Your commitment and energy is enough. It is a great way to make new friends and contribute to your community. Partners in Mission Food Bank volunteers provide essential services in many ways, including assembling daily hampers, sorting food donations, breaking down and portioning bulk items, packing eggs into cartons, keeping the warehouse safe and clean, and providing helpful input to other volunteers and staff. Interested in volunteering with Partners in Mission Food Bank? Please call our volunteer coordinator at 613-544-4100.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if you could borrow a musical instrument free of charge, just like you can borrow books from your local library? We think so too. That's why the Joe Chitlin Memorial Musical Instrument Lending Library, also known as Joe's Mill, has been lending guitars, keyboards, saxophones, and many other instruments to the Kingston community free of charge for almost 20 years. We are a registered charity, relying solely on the generosity of our community to donate their time, money, and instruments to keep this amazing service alive. Find us at